Hello, homemakers, and welcome to season two of the Art of Home podcast, where we are continuing to explore how homemakers cultivate a place to belong. I'm your host, Allison Weeks. I'm a wife, mom of four grown kids, and I have been practicing the art of home for over 28 years. We are so glad you've joined us for another season of The Art of Home. We have some wonderful homemaking stories lined up for you this season, so make sure you're subscribed to our website, theartofhomepodcast.com, so that you get notified of all new content that we're putting out. You don't want to miss a single thing, because wherever you are in your homemaking journey, this podcast is here to encourage and inspire you in your practice of the art of home. In today's episode, I'm talking with my friend Kelly Akins about her practice of the art of home. For almost 40 years, Kelly and her husband Mark have made it their goal to instill a deep love and dedication to family in their children and grandchildren. We discuss her beginnings as a young military wife and their commitment to debt-free living and the sacrifices that are required by that. We talk about Kelly's love of games and puzzles, cornbread and beans, and showing hospitality without breaking the bank. She also graciously opens her heart to share her experience as a full-time caregiver for her adult son, Stephen, who suffered a traumatic brain injury in 2009 and passed away in 2017. Kelly's journey as a homemaker is one of joy, heartbreak, trial, love, and faithfulness. I know you will be encouraged by her story of home. All right, Kelly, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are today? Then we'll go back and trace your homemaker story from its beginnings.
Okay. Today, I am a retired military spouse that I'm very proud of my husband's service in the military. I'm proud of the family that we were as a military family. I currently work outside of the home. That's been something that has happened here and there throughout my life. I enjoy what I do. I have a service heart, and I'm working as an office administrator, and I feel my role is to serve those that I work with. Mm. I am a grandmother. Mm-hmm. Grammy is what I'm known by. I love that part of my life.
Yes. How many grandkids do you have?
Five.
Five. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I have two from my son and three from my daughter, and they are precious, and there is nothing I'd rather hear than the word Grammy when it comes from them.
Yeah.
So I started my morning this morning. Caleb contacted me through Messenger and said, Grammy, what are you doing?
So let's talk about your beginnings as a homemaker. All right. When did you first become a homemaker?
In 1982, mm-hmm. a long time ago, my husband and I got married on June 19th, 1982, and it was a move away from home. I was born and raised here in the San Antonio area, and I married my husband and promptly moved to South Carolina.
Wow.
That's where he was stationed at the time.
Okay.
So I was blessed that I had a sister who was also a military spouse living in South Carolina, living in the same area.
That's awesome.
They were stationed at the same base, so it was nice.
Yeah, that's really, what a gift that was.
Yeah.
made that transition probably a little bit easier for you.
Oh, I'm sure it did, because I am a family homebody. But it was exciting. It was a lot of fun. And we intended to wait. You know, Mark and I had these grand ideas before we got married and made our plans. And we're going to wait about 5-6 years before having kids. 10 months after we got married, Stephen was born.
So, you know, that does tend to happen.
Yes.
So your sister was already there in South Carolina.
Yes.
When you guys got there. So she was a little further along in the homemaking journey than you. Is she older than you?
She is 9 years older than me.
Okay. Yes. So I'm sure she played a big part in just mentoring you and helping
you. She did. And I have another sister, Marcia, who's 10 years older than me. Mm-hmm. And she was a very big part in teaching me homemaking skills. But I think the biggest teacher was my mother.
Okay.
And she taught us as we were growing up, you know, what we need to learn to be prepared. And my dad was he helped a lot of that. My mom would tell you that she didn't know how to boil a pot of water until she got married. It was my dad that taught her. Mm-hmm. So the teaching really came from both of them.
That's great.
Yeah.
Would you say your dad, who was more comfortable in the kitchen, your mom or your dad?
Oh, by the time I came around, I think my mom.
Your mom.
I saw my mom in the kitchen a lot. Yeah. But it was not uncommon at all for dad to be cooking dinner. Mm-hmm. You know, come home from school and dad would be in the kitchen cooking.
That's great. What other kinds of things did you guys do growing up to learn your homemaking skills? Did you have like a cleaning day that you were expected to help clean in the house?
We were expected to help clean every day.
Yeah. Okay.
I came from a generation that we had chores that we had to do.
Yeah.
And I'm thankful for that because I do think it helped. Mom would have us take turns in even shopping for meal items, the produce, to learn how to shop produce. Mm-hmm. First time I went in to buy a tomato, I didn't know what to look for. Red tomato, that's it. But she taught us how to, cantaloupe, how to smell the cantaloupe to know whether it's ready to buy or not. And so all of that, I think, was very helpful. I thought was silly at the time, and why do I need this?
Right.
But boy, was it helpful when I was on my own and had to go to the grocery store.
Absolutely.
And figure out what to get.
Those are those little things you don't consider,
how
important it is to know that stuff. So,
and aside from food, she would help in mending, to sewing a button on. Mm-hmm. She taught me how to do that, taught me how to hem a pair of pants or just shorten a pair of pants if need be, let the hem out to lengthen a pair of pants.
Yeah.
You know, all those things that it's so easy to just say, I can't wear this. Mm-hmm. But there's little tricks you can do to make a difference. And so that was all very helpful.
That's great. So you did have quite a lot of experience already.
I did.
Coming in, which is that next question. So I'm going to go on to this next question. Were there other resources? Now, once you became a homemaker, you were off in South Carolina. You had your sister to help you and what your mom had taught you. What did you turn to if you needed to learn something new? Was there like a book or a favorite magazine or something like that?
Well, I love Southern Living magazines. Mm-hmm. They are a little too advanced for me.
Yeah.
I would say even now. But it was a great resource to at least read and look at and get information. But I am not scared to try new things. So I just tackled a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And I just figured it out. Mm-hmm. And my husband was very helpful. My husband's a little OCD.
Okay.
So he was very helpful at helping me figure some things out where I might be more tend to just let something go.
Yeah.
And he's that OCD part of him is like, nope, we've got to tackle this. We've got to figure it. So we worked together. And quite honestly, with Stephen coming along so quickly, I was sick the entire time I was pregnant.
No.
I mean, like the entire 9 months I was pregnant. And so a lot of stuff went by the wayside. Uh-huh. And I went from jumping into married life to jumping into mama life real fast.
Yes.
And so I didn't spend a lot of time on just creating the home. Mm-hmm. I spent a lot of time on creating a child's room, a child's place, not just a couple's place.
Exactly.
And so it was a little different, I think, than a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
But I had this grand idea before I got married. You know, I come from the generation where we still had Sears and Roebuck catalogs and JCPenney catalogs and Montgomery Ward's catalogs.
Yeah.
And I can remember as even a young child, I think because my sisters were so much older than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm watching them get married, I would look through the catalogs and I would pick, you know, the furniture I'm going to have and the curtains I'm going to have and the tableware I would just circle everything I wanted. And when we got married, none of that mattered anymore.
Yeah.
And thankfully, God gave me a heart that's not really what is important because we lived on pennies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we didn't have the money to buy everything out of the catalog that I thought I needed.
Right.
But it was okay. We made do, and we made it work for us. And mm-hmm. I will tell you, our first dresser in our room mm-hmm. was milk crates.
Oh,
we set milk crates up and we just stacked clothes in there. But we made it work. Mm-hmm. And it didn't keep us from being able to be happy and have joy.
Yeah.
And so I think that comes from being taught how important family is mm-hmm. And focusing more on the individual than the stuff.
Absolutely.
And if you look around my house now, you'll see I still don't have curtains. And I like it that way.
Well, we've got some really nice scenery here in this part of Texas. So you just want minimal coverage on the windows.
Yes.
I'm looking out your windows right here and there's a hummingbird at yes. your feeder. Beautiful oaks. We have gorgeous oaks here in this part of Texas. And so, yeah, you don't want to cover those up.
No.
So that's a great lesson, though. Thanks for sharing that mm-hmm. about it's not really about the stuff.
No.
It's about the people. What was your steepest learning curve when you were newly into homemaking? What was the hardest thing for you to tackle and learn?
I think sharing was the hardest thing to learn.
Sharing.
Which is very odd for me to say because I am one of five kids. So uh-huh. And I'm one of the youngest. My brother's younger than I am. And the mm-hmm. four girls, I was the youngest girl. And we always shared. We shared everything.
Yeah.
But when I got married, I don't know, I guess I had that selfish streak in me mm-hmm. and being able to share responsibilities
okay.
and share in life that I think what I mean by sharing is being able to share in life with my husband mm-hmm. as a spouse.
Yeah.
You know, I had shared with my sisters and my brother. But that is not the same as being married mm-hmm. and sharing in life. We had to come together and we had to make decisions together. Mm-hmm. It couldn't just be me making decisions
yes.
or me just following his decisions.
Right.
We had to learn to live together as a couple, as one.
Uh-huh.
And that was hard for me to see that. I saw it in my mom and dad all the time. They were perfect examples. But I had never lived a life where I had to mm-hmm. share everything, mm-hmm. my insides, share my heart.
Exactly.
And so that was the hardest thing for me to learn is how to live cohesively with my husband. As much as I loved him, just learning that we share everything.
Uh-huh.
So.
Was there a particular point that you feel like was a turning point in learning that lesson for you guys?
Oh my goodness, yes. And this is hard to share, but I will.
Okay.
People tend to believe that you get married and it's just going to be this wonderful life
mm-hmm.
forever.
Mm-hmm.
And there's even the 7-year itch
yeah.
thing you hear about that you have wedding bliss up until 7 years and then you start it. I think being pregnant so fast, being so sick yeah. all the time, having a child so quickly, and we were young.
Yeah.
We had that 7-year itch real early
mm.
where we just kind of struggled sometimes.
Yeah.
And that this is where I come back to that sharing. My husband was relatively new in the military, first time for him to live away from home.
Mm.
And I'm sick at home. I'm not able to get out and go do things. And he would go on and do. And it would be hurtful.
Yeah.
And I would call my mom and dad and I would just be upset. I can't believe. And I always got the same answers. You've got to be strong. You got to remember y'all made a commitment to God. You made a commitment to one another. And I did this way too often, evidently, because one time I called upset and my dad's answer was, can you get to the airport and I will have a ticket for you?
Oh, wow.
And that just opened my eyes that, wait, I don't really want this.
Yeah.
I don't want to come home.
Yeah.
I want this to work. And it was then that I realized I can't rely on my parents to make everything okay anymore. Mm-hmm. This has to come from us. Yeah. We either have to work at it and we have to make it work, mm-hmm. or it's not. But I cannot rely on my mom and dad to make it okay. Yeah. And it's not fair to my parents, mm-hmm. as their young daughter, to be complaining, mm-hmm. about my life. And it was that just changed my whole attitude. Mm. And I very easily could have said, oh, yes, I can get to the airport, have a ticket for me.
Yeah.
But I knew in my heart, I love my husband. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to leave my husband. And I don't know if my dad planned it that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I do believe it was a God thing.
Yeah.
And it just woke me up to the fact that, no, my marriage is important enough to work for.
Yeah.
And we are going to do this. And we did. We worked together and we have had a wonderful life. We've been married for a very long time, since 1982.
Yeah.
So it's almost, I don't even know how many years it is. 40, almost 40. Almost 40 years. Oh my goodness. That's right.
Next year
will be 40 years.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah.
That's fantastic.
I didn't even know I was that old. That's scary.
You're like, we're at that stage where you think the 80s or the 90s, that was just like 20 years ago,
yeah.
right? No, that was like 30 or 40 years ago. Yeah. Well, thank you for telling that story.
Sure.
I think that's a great answer to that question. So did you ever work outside of the home? You said off and on.
I did. After Stephen was born, and he was 6 months old when I first went to work. And that was pretty much, we felt a necessity.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, my husband was in the military, a young airman, mm-hmm. Brand new airman in the military. We didn't make a lot of money. And we thought it was very important that I go to work. And I worked at a construction company, mm-hmm. as an office administrator. And it was clear across town from where we lived. The day that I realized this is not going to work for me, was the daycare called me. We had put Stephen in daycare. The daycare called me and told me Stephen had gotten injured. Something slight, but he probably needed to see a doctor. Another child bit him on the cheek.
Oh, my goodness.
And so he probably needs to see a doctor just to make sure for infection and that kind of thing. And I told my boss I was going to have to leave to go pick up my son and take him to the doctor. And his response was, can't you get your mom to do it?
Oh.
And I was like, no, I can't. And even if my mom were right here,
you wouldn't.
That's not my mom's responsibility.
Yeah, yeah.
Stephen is my responsibility. And I realized this isn't going to work, because mm-hmm. my job is to be a mom.
Mm-hmm.
And that means I'm the one to nurture him. I'm mm-hmm. the one to care for him. And I can't turn that responsibility over to someone else. So it wasn't long after that I quit working and mm-hmm. stayed home. Then there were a couple of other times when I would take a job. I worked while the kids were in school, mm-hmm. Some, and it was fun. I enjoyed it, mm-hmm. but I've never been career driven. I've just never had that drive. My responsibility was my home and my children,
mm-hmm.
and being a good wife. And if the job got in the way, that was what needed to go. Mm-hmm. I would not allow a job to get in the way of me taking care of my kids.
Yeah.
So, and being military family, we moved around a lot.
I'm sure.
So even with that, it was difficult sometimes to find a job, because you're new to the area. You change jobs frequently.
Right. And you might not be in that location for very long.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah.
So it wasn't always real easy, mm-hmm. but it wasn't an issue for us, because we both felt, Mark and I both felt, that the most important thing was to be mom, mm-hmm. and take care of the kids.
Yeah. Which requires some sacrifices then financially, if you're going to make,
it does.
If you're going to do that. So
it does.
Do you feel like the trade-off was worth it?
Absolutely. Yeah. I wouldn't do it any differently if I had to do it all over again. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you, there were times where you hear the saying living payday to payday. Mm-hmm. We've often talked about how we lived payday to not yet payday.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we made it work. We ate lots of beans and cornbread. Thankfully, that was a favorite meal for both of us before we ever got married. But we made it work. Yeah. And there were just times when we wondered, how are we going to make this work? How can we do this? Mm-hmm. And living so far from home, being in the military and being in South Carolina.
Yeah.
It was about a 24-hour drive for us to get back here to San Antonio.
Yeah.
And we did that twice a year, usually. And I can't tell you how blessed we'd be to come home and mom and dad would pack a cooler of deer meat for us to take back home with us. And we would make that last.
Yes. Yes.
Ration it out and make it last. But what a blessing it was to not have that expense. Yeah. And be able to make things work. And I think in some way it made us stronger because we didn't have the money to go do a lot.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So our balance was stay at home, play games, have friends over, play games. Mm-hmm. I am a huge game player. Yeah. Still am.
Yeah.
I love that my grandkids love to play games.
That's awesome.
So
we like games in our house too. What's your favorite game?
Oh, goodness. I have so many. Yahtzee is probably one of my all-time favorites.
We are big Yahtzee fans.
Yes. And then cards. I love to play any kind of card game. Mm-hmm. We play when the adults get together, a little more involved game is Hand and Foot. It's one of my favorites.
Yes, I've heard of that.
Yes. And then with the kids, we like to play Kings in the Corner. Mm-hmm. It's one they can pick up pretty quickly. And I've taught the kids how to play solitaire because I'll do that. If I have no one to play a game with, I'll just sit and play solitaire.
Yeah.
So, yes, I'm still a big game player.
Well, you have a whole game room.
Yes.
Which I was getting the tour before we started recording, and they have this awesome pool table and a future dart area, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I love your little card. I noticed you had the king and the queen, the face cards up on the wall there.
Yeah.
So that's great. We're big into games in my family. It gets actually a little bit. Does it get like rough with your family?
Cause it can be.
We can get pretty intense.
Yes. And I think I was taught this by my mom and dad too. You know, we always had to say good game when you're done.
Yeah.
Can't be a sore winner is what we called it. You can't lord it over anybody.
Yeah.
But you also couldn't be a sore loser. Mm-hmm. And I can remember with my kids playing games with them and intentionally allowing them to win and do well. And pretending like I didn't have a play. And
something.
That didn't even faze me because I just wanted to be spending that time with them and playing the games. But
that's great.
Yeah.
All right. So we're talking about balance, and we can't talk about balance without talking about goals. And I just would love to know, are you a goal setter? And how do you do that? Because a lot of people will set yearly goals or five-year goals or monthly goals, and that helps them sort of order their days. So what about you?
We are not very good at goals,
okay.
Quite honestly. I really believe, for me, getting married young, being one of five children growing up, and on the younger end of that, I allowed my siblings to take that role and be the goal setters and follow their lead and watch them. My husband is one of two.
Okay.
He's the youngest. And we just, I honestly, Allison, I think we were just too dumb to make a goal. We didn't want to fail. So if you make a goal, you're going to fail if you don't meet your goal. But we set goals differently. Our goals were to raise our kids to love family. Mm-hmm. Our goals were to teach our kids that there's nobody that you can depend on more than family.
Mm-hmm.
And getting together with family. We didn't take vacations. You know, a lot of people would set a goal that this summer we're going to go to Disney World.
Yeah.
We didn't have money to do that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And we lived so far from our families that our biggest goal was to get back home and see family.
Right.
So our goals were so different than so many of our friends. And one huge goal we did have and we have maintained through life is to not live in debt. Mm. And I think the only debt we really have had has been a house and a car. Mm-hmm. But if we couldn't afford something, mm-hmm. we just did without. Mm-hmm. We didn't use credit cards to buy. We didn't want that hanging over our head.
Right.
So our goal was to learn how to enjoy life on what we had.
Right.
And be satisfied with that. And I think we've made it. We still feel that way. I probably could be considered a very cheap person. And it doesn't bother me at all.
We prefer the word frugal. Sounds nicer.
It does sound nicer.
You practice wise home economy.
Yes, that's yes.
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, because that would be a lot. That's a huge goal for most people that they don't ever realize in their lives. And what was your secret sauce? You know, how did you guys, were you budgeters or how did you maintain that goal?
We tried to budget mm-hmm. and we would sit down and work on a budget and realize we don't have the money to have a budget. So this isn't working. So we did things. Again, I will say one of the big thing for us was to have people come to the house. We love to have people come to the house. But we would do things like, hey, we'll open up the house. We can play games. But everybody bring your own meal mm-hmm. because we can't afford to feed you.
Yeah.
We can't afford to feed us. We certainly can't afford to feed you. But it worked. And and the circle of friends we had were also young airmen families. Mm-hmm. So I believe a lot of them were in the same boat, whether they want to admit it or not. So it just worked that we really did. We would sit down and try to work on a budget. And it's like, this is not going to work at all. So we just have to figure out where to cut back.
Yeah.
I can tell you, I was disappointed as much as I love my military life. I was so disappointed when my husband went to his, it was his supervisor. I don't think it was his commander, mm-hmm. but he went to his supervisor and he asked, how can my wife and I move into base housing? Mm-hmm. Because we are just having a very hard time making ends meet. Mm-hmm. And he set Mark down and he asked him, well, what kind of bills do you have? Mm-hmm. And Mark's like electric, water, mm-hmm. the house, you know.
Yeah.
And he said, no. Like, what kind of credit card bills do you have? What kind of things have you bought on credit that you're having to make payments on? Do you have a new car? And Mark's like, no. We drove a 1967 Buick Special that mm-hmm. my parents gave us as a wedding gift. Mm-hmm. That was our car. We didn't have any extras. We just didn't. And we didn't have credit card bills. And his supervisor told him, if you were to go buy new furniture on credit, mm-hmm. or if you were to go buy a new car or a new boat, then we could get you into base housing.
Oh my goodness.
And that was the advice he got. And my husband and I were just like, we can't do this.
Wow.
We just can't do this. And so we stuck it out until you have to be a certain rank in the military before mm-hmm. they'll allow you into base housing. And we stuck it out until we were able to get into base housing. And then when we were able to, we applied and did that and made that move. And it was a huge help for us financially.
I'm sure.
And but I will never forget that advice that he got and how crooked it sounded to me.
Yes, that's terrible. Oh my goodness.
And I'm so thankful that Mark and I already felt very mm-hmm. strong about not living on credit.
Yeah.
Because it would have been very easy.
It would have been, if you didn't know better, that would have been like, oh, well, okay, well, I'll go do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's how we made it work. We just cut back. Mm-hmm. We ate a lot of beans and cornbread. I'm not kidding. Yeah. That was a standard meal at our house, and mm-hmm. it's still one of our favorites.
How well did the day-to-day reality of being a homemaker match your expectations? I mean, you kind of alluded to this about the catalogs and circling that what was going to look like, you know, and then with the sharing. Was there any other part of that?
I just think that it was not at all what I expected.
Uh-huh.
You know, the you make grand ideas in mm-hmm. your head of what something's going to be like. And I don't want to mislead anybody. I loved getting married mm-hmm. and being married. And we had so much fun together. I made the mistake of when we had a bad day mm-hmm. sharing that mm-hmm. too much with my parents.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I had to learn.
Yeah.
That some things between a husband and a wife mm-hmm. need to just be between a husband and a wife.
Yes.
That doesn't need to be discussed with anybody else, because the advice you're going to get.
Yes.
Luckily, I went to my mom and dad, who gave very sound advice.
Right.
But if I had chosen to share that with someone else,
mm-hmm.
I could have very easily heard the advice from day one. You need to get out of this.
Right.
This is not fair.
Right.
He's not being fair to you. Because, of course, all they heard was my side of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
How much of our married life was I not fair to him
mm-hmm.
if I really was honest about mm-hmm. how things went? So my expectations were just this beautiful wedding bliss,
mm-hmm.
never going to end.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that, but it's something worth working at.
Absolutely.
It's something, if you are even thinking about marriage, you have to know that. Well, one of the things my husband and I did was we determined divorce was not an option,
mm-hmm.
period, before we ever got married.
Mm-hmm.
Divorce was not an option. We actually cut the word out of our dictionary
mm-hmm.
because it's not an option
yeah.
once you make that commitment. And so anyone even contemplating getting married, making that determination
mm-hmm.
that, yes, you are going to have hard times.
Yeah.
In everything you do, you're going to have hard times. The perfect job, you're going to have days that you mm-hmm. just don't know why you're doing what you're doing.
Right.
You know, in married life, you're going to wonder, what was I thinking?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to remind yourself, I'm thinking I love this man.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. that's what I have to hold on to.
Yeah.
Don't hold on to the bad. Only hold on to the good and yeah. remember the good.
And working through the bad with your spouse
yes.
is, I think that's what you were alluding to, talking about before you run to somebody else
mm-hmm.
to discuss these issues, you need to work it out with your spouse.
Yes.
Because that is it is sacred. It is a sacred relationship
mm-hmm.
that really needs to be protected, almost like a garden. I've heard that before, you know, like your marriage, your relationship is like a garden, and gardens have walls, and they have walls for a reason. You know, it's not because we want to keep everybody out, but because that's like a special sacred place.
Right.
And you just need to be careful who you give access to that intimate part of your relationship.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that's great. Well, what about loneliness as a homemaker? Because it can be lonely, and especially as a military wife moving around a lot. Was that something that you ever had to deal with? And if so, what did you do to combat loneliness?
I think probably the loneliest part of my life so far was the first 9 months of that I was pregnant with Stephen,
mm-hmm.
Because I was so sick.
Mm-hmm.
I was sick enough that Mark would get up in the morning and help me to the restroom, help me back to bed,
mm-hmm.
bring me Sprite and saltine crackers. He'd go to work. He'd come home at lunch, help me to the restroom,
oh.
help me back to bed, give me more Sprite and more crackers.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's how it went. And now this goes kind of back to expectations, too.
Yeah.
I watched my mom get up every single morning and make breakfast mm-hmm. for the whole family.
Mm-hmm.
We had some kind of a breakfast, and it wasn't just a bowl of cereal mm-hmm. or Pop-Tarts, I don't even know if there were Pop-Tarts when I was that young. Not sure. But she would make eggs and biscuits and bacon and
yeah.
eggs, biscuits and gravy sometimes. Sometimes she would surprise us and we would have hamburgers and french fries, little tiny hamburgers and french fries for breakfast. And then that
oh.
night we would have breakfast for dinner. And it was
That's
just
fun.
Always so much fun and so exciting. When I got married, I thought it was my job to make breakfast mm-hmm. every single morning. And I would try before that first month, before I was pregnant, I would get up and I would make breakfast for Mark. And that was one of our biggest issues. We would fuss about that because I couldn't get him out of bed.
Oh.
And finally, he told me, he said, I don't eat breakfast.
I would much rather sleep until I have to put my clothes on and walk out the door than get up and have breakfast. And that was devastating to me. I'm like, how can you not eat breakfast?
Oh my goodness.
This is what I'm supposed to do as a wife. This is my job. And he's like, no, I don't eat breakfast. So it was a learning curve for us to figure that out. And I really did feel like I was letting him down by not providing him breakfast, even though he's telling me he didn't want it.
He did not want it. That is such a good lesson to not just assume.
Yeah.
You know, because in your mind, that was the picture of what being a successful homemaker was going to look like. And that wasn't at all what he wanted from you.
Right.
You could have just stayed in bed and slept longer.
I could have. So, yeah, it's that learning that things can't be just what you make up in your head.
Exactly.
You have to learn to live together, and you have to learn what's important to each other.
Which requires communication.
Yes.
Yes.
A lot of very communication.
Important. Otherwise, you stay in your head, and then you tell stories to yourself about why they're not doing what you want them to do.
Oh, yes.
That's a very dangerous place to be.
It is.
Yeah.
Some of the conversations I have with myself are the most dangerous ones.
Yeah. We will get back to Kelly's story in just a few minutes. Right now, it's time for Historical Homemaker Hints. This is the part of the podcast where we highlight some of the helpful and not so helpful hints doled out to homemakers throughout history. Today's hints come from the 1910 publication, Practical Suggestions for Mother and Housewife by Marion Mills Miller. Mrs. Miller offers the following advice regarding children's footwear. A child should run barefoot as much as conditions and climate permit. When it wears shoes, these should conform as much as possible to the shape of the foot. With such footwear, the active child may form for life the habit of a natural gait, especially if parents will point out the beauty and advantages of this and praise the men and women of their acquaintance who possess it. She has a stern word for mothers who dress their children like little adults. If mothers will remember that children are not dolls and that mothers are not children to take pleasure in bedecking them, they will need no advice about dressing their little ones. There is only one rule for her to follow. She should consult the comfort and health of the child, and as far as consistent with these, the convenience to herself. It may be cute to dress a child like a miniature man or woman, but it is cruel to the child. And finally, in honor of our guest Kelly's fondness for games, let's see what kind of family recreation Mrs. Miller suggests. Healthful sports should be encouraged in games such as chess that develops the intellect. There are many card games, such as Authors, that impart useful instruction in literature, history, natural science, business, etc. Playing these in the home is a good thing no less for parent than child. Many a mother has acquired a well-rounded culture after her marriage through her determination to keep ahead of the children in their studies and intellectual activities. So I looked up the card game Authors, and I found a set on Amazon for $7, as well as a set from 1872 on eBay for $100. The game was originally published in 1861. The deck contains 52 cards featuring portraits of 13 honored writers with lists of their 4 greatest literary works. Featured authors include Twain, Dickens, Shakespeare, Thackeray, and more. The object is to collect complete sets or books of 4 by calling for cards from other players, kind of like Go Fish or Old Maid. The winner is the player who collects the most sets by the end of the game. The cards also have standard suits and numbers in both the upper and lower corners, so the deck can be used for traditional card games as well. You could learn about the giants of literature while you play Texas Hold'em, but you're probably not going to see them on the tables in Vegas. Well, thanks for listening to today's Historical Homemaker Hints. As always, please remember, this segment is for entertainment purposes only, and I leave it to you, the listener, to determine the safety and soundness of this advice. Now back to Kelly's story. So we're going to go right now into a rapid-fire quick answer question in answer time about homemaking tasks. Now, you may elaborate on something if you want to.
Okay.
But you don't have to.
Okay.
You know, you can just quick answer. So, okay. Homemaking tasks. One that you love.
Cooking.
Okay. One that you hate.
Cleaning up after the meal.
That's kind of a problem, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay, well, let me ask you this. So do you and your husband have like a deal where if you cook, he cleans up or no?
Oh, no. He tries to help me clean up sometimes and he's much more thorough than I am. So it drives me nuts. I tell him, no, you just go sit down. Let me do this.
I can do this so much faster.
Yes, because he'll come in and his idea of helping me is, oh, well, here, let me clean the refrigerator out. I'm like, oh, no, not right now. Or here are all the knobs off of the stove. Let's clean those. I'm like, no, oh, I just so want to clean up.
Oh, that's so funny. Oh my goodness. You just need to set a time for spring cleaning and get him involved with that.
I think he's learned. That's how he gets out of helping clean.
So there's some ulterior motives there.
Okay.
We'll move on. All right. How about one task that you grew to love?
Probably laundry.
Okay.
Yeah. That has never been a chore that I enjoyed much. Mm-hmm. But I was taught by another Christian woman a long time ago that my laundry time could really be a special time with God and just praying blessings over my children and mm-hmm. over my husband. And that totally changed my perspective of doing laundry.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't feel like that big of a chore anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great tip. I've had a couple of interviewees say the same thing.
Really? Mm-hmm. That's so cool.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
So what about your worst homemaking fail?
Oh my gosh. Okay, so I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I got this packet from you with all the questions that were going to be asked.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, Mark, look at these questions. And I'm reading them to him.
Yeah.
And I got done reading them and he said, well, I have a couple of answers for some of them. And so, well, tell me what you're thinking.
Uh-huh.
And this one, we both had the same answer.
Okay.
So when I was pregnant with Stephen, just days before I went into labor, probably the day before, I decided I was going to make homemade mac and cheese.
Okay.
Normally did Kraft mac and cheese out of the box.
Yes.
But nope, we're going to do homemade mac and cheese. And I love to cook from scratch. That's just one of those things that to me, it's a more loving way of providing a meal.
Yeah.
You know, you spend all this time and energy. So how hard can it be, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got macaroni and you've got cheese. You put it together, you got a great dish. By the time I finished cooking, I did not feel well, so I wouldn't eat, but my husband ate it.
Mm-hmm.
Went into labor the next day. We called my mom and dad. My mom and dad and my brother all came to South Carolina. And while they were there, mom's going to help me and let me take care of Stephen, and she's going to clean and do. And she started cleaning out my refrigerator and she pulled the mac and cheese out, the leftovers. And she said, what is this? It was rock solid. She couldn't get it out of the bowl.
Oh my goodness.
So I don't know what I did with the mac and cheese, but I can make homemade mac and cheese now that is very good. But that was an epic fail.
Oh.
And my husband will tell you, he doesn't think he went to the bathroom for 2 years after he ate that. He ate it like a good husband.
Oh.
And yes, and he says how good it was. And it was not good at all. I have no idea what I did.
Wow.
But it was bad. I told mom, just throw the whole bowl away. Just throw the whole thing away.
That's great. So. Oh, my goodness. Okay. How about a memorable homemaking achievement?
Oh, goodness. I have a few. I guess the biggest achievement is instilling the values of family to my daughter. Mm-hmm. Now that my son's gone, my son was so family oriented.
Yeah.
So I instilled it in both of them. But my daughter and even my grandchildren now.
Yeah.
One of my biggest blessings is when my oldest granddaughter, Stephen's daughter, comes over. She was here one day and she wanted me to go through and list every family member in the order of their birth, all the spouses, all the kids, and go through. And she holds to that. And I don't think that's accidental.
Yeah.
I don't think that's even really normal because we have a huge family And but she just loves the whole idea of family. Mm-hmm. And my other granddaughter does too. Emily's the same way. Just mm-hmm. family is so very important. The boys, they love family, but, mm-hmm. you know, playing yeah. in the pool,
yeah,
playing ball, those are things that are a little more important, I think, to them.
Yeah.
But deep down in their heart, I think they still hold to family,
yeah.
that family is so important.
That's a great achievement. Well, what about special challenges as a homemaker? Did you face any special challenges, and how did you learn to manage those?
My biggest challenge as a homemaker was the injury to my son mm-hmm. when he was in an automobile accident.
Mm-hmm.
And he was already an adult.
Yeah.
Already a husband, already a dad. So he wasn't under my authority anymore.
Right.
But he was still my son.
Yeah.
And he was in a horrible car accident that resulted in a severe traumatic brain injury
mm-hmm.
and left him in a minimally conscious state
mm-hmm.
for years. And the day we got the call of his accident, I have to share, was incredible to us in how we saw God's hand in all of it.
Mm-hmm.
I was working outside of the home at the time at a school, intermediate school, as a receptionist. And I have to share this because God was so, when I look back on it,
mm-hmm.
it was so evident to me that God allowed everything to play out that day just right for what we needed.
Yeah.
I did not use my cell phone at work. I didn't even know my husband's work phone number.
Mm-hmm.
My cell phone was locked in a cabinet, and I happened to be standing right by that cabinet when my daughter-in-law called. And for whatever reason, which I can only say it was God prompting me,
yeah.
I told the lady I was talking with that I needed to get my phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I got my phone out. My daughter-in-law told me that Stephen had been in a terrible car accident. That's all she knew. She was hysterical on the phone. It was mm-hmm. very hard to understand her. She didn't even know what hospital he was going to. She was notified immediately, and she notified us immediately.
Yeah.
My husband works in civil service at Randolph, and that day he was actually driving the Secretary of the Air Force from Washington, D.C., was here in San Antonio, and he was driving him around downtown San Antonio
mm-hmm.
to different things that he needed to visit, and Mark just happened to be the driver. And my boss told me I needed to call my husband,
mm-hmm.
and I told her there's no way, and he won't answer his phone. He's with the Secretary of the Air Force. But I called.
Mm-hmm.
He answered on the first ring because when I called, he had just walked into the bathroom away from the Secretary of the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just perfect timing.
Yeah.
I don't believe that's coincidental.
Mm-hmm.
I believe God timed it just right.
Yeah.
And my boss, who was the principal of the school, took me back in a room and she said, let's find where your son is going. And she got on the phone and started making phone calls. And come to find out, she talked to the hospital. She was talking to the emergency room, and I could not even understand everything she was talking about
mm-hmm.
because she was using acronyms that I'm not familiar with
mm-hmm.
and language that I just hadn't been around.
Yeah.
Come to find out later, she was an RN by trade that decided to go into education.
Mm.
And so she was asking all the medical questions that mm-hmm. she needed to know the severity of what was happening. She encouraged us to get on the road and go. But in that encouragement, she was willing to drive us all the way to San Angelo because she didn't think we should be driving.
Yeah.
Luckily, we were too dumb to understand the severity of it.
Yeah.
And I thought she was crazy for offering to drive us.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her, no, we are capable. And we headed off to San Angelo, 3.5 hours down the road. And the whole trip, we talked about, okay, we don't know what's going on right now. We don't know what his injuries are, but even if he's lost a leg, you know, this is, we can work through this. Mm-hmm. We can do so much to help him. And how are we going to work this out? And we even talked about immediately me walking away from my job just to be available. We talked about if he lost an arm or if we talked about so many scenarios of what his injuries could be. Never once thought about the brain.
Yeah.
And we get to the hospital. He was just, had just come out of surgery, and his neurosurgeon, which I wasn't even, I tell you, I don't even think I knew what a neurosurgeon actually did at that point. His neurosurgeon met with us and told us that our son had a severe TBI, and all I heard was TB, because I had never heard the terminology TBI, which is traumatic brain injury. All I heard was your son has severe TB, and I was a basket case, and I just started fussing at the doctor. How can he have TB? He was in an automobile accident. That doesn't make any sense. And he took us aside and explained everything to us. And over 90% of Stephen's brain was severely damaged, but they did surgery the best they could, and they medically put Stephen into a coma when he first got to the hospital, and they were going to be watching him very closely. So we lived through that, and that was probably the largest challenge I've ever faced in my life. It was a challenge in our marriage. It was a challenge as a mom, because I had my daughter who still needed mom. She was married and she didn't have any children. She had just got married 2 months prior to Stephen's accident, which again, I just praise God for that. Stephen was at her wedding and was a very big part of that whole celebration. And it would have just devastated her not to have her brother, because they are so close. But I was still, she was living in South Carolina. We're here in Texas. I mean, I'm sorry, she wasn't in South Carolina. She was in Florida.
Yeah.
And we were here in Texas. And, but I was still her mom. I was still wanting to help her learn how to handle married life. And yet all my attention was going to Stephen. So it was very, a huge struggle for me how to balance this. And of course, Sarah came right out and she stayed with us in San Angelo for, I think, a couple of weeks. I can't remember exactly now, but her husband was very gracious to tell her go. And she came home. And so there was a lot of loss there when he had his accident. He survived 8 years and never came out of a minimally conscious status in that amount of time. And Stephen and I lived in one hospital or another for 3.5 years. So I basically left my husband to stay with our son. It was a decision we both made. Mark and I both agreed that this was important. But that was a struggle.
Yeah.
We had a house built while I was in the hospital with Stephen, so that we would have a house to bring Stephen home to. And my husband was in Texas taking care of that. At this point, Stephen and I were in Florida at a VA hospital that was number one brain injury unit. And it's been a struggle. It's been a struggle coming back home. And living together. When I first got back to this house, when Stephen and I moved in, Mark moved in our house in August of 2012. Stephen and I moved back in June 2013. So that was the first time he was out of the hospital since October 09.
Wow.
And I didn't even feel like it was my house. My husband had lived here for almost a year on his own. And I would move something, anything, you know, just change where the location of cooking utensils were. And he would, what are you doing? Why are you moving that? So it was a huge struggle, a huge strain on our relationship. And I won't say on our marriage, because it was never to a point that mm-hmm. our marriage was in trouble, but it was a huge strain on our relationship, just learning how to live together again.
Yeah.
I was in a world in the hospital where it was constant noise, mm-hmm. The machines that were keeping Stephen alive, the nurses in and out, the treatments that had to be done, all of that, just constant noise, constant noise. Mm-hmm. Mark lived in a home by himself where it was
silent.
Silence.
Yeah.
And we would sit down in the evening and put the TV on to watch TV. And he's over there chomping ice. And I'm like, oh my gosh, can you be quiet? And he's like, what? What am I doing? So, you know, he created his own noise.
Yeah.
And that noise was just an irritant to me because I couldn't get away from noise. Mm. So it's little things like that that you just don't think are a huge thing. I mean, you think about if your husband is chomping ice, is it really going to bother you? Probably not. But I'm telling you, I wanted to hit him upside the head. Just stop it. So just learning to live together 24/7 again was a huge, something for us to overcome.
Yeah.
And on top of it, it wasn't just Mark and I learning to live together again. Now we had Stephen at home who required 24/7 care.
Mm-hmm.
And when you say 24/7 care, that's almost hard to understand even. His care, I couldn't leave him alone for any more than maybe 10 minutes without checking on him. And even that was hard because you never knew what symptom he might have. Mm-hmm. We had to monitor his oxygen, his heart rate, his blood pressure, his temperature all the time. His brain injury took away his body's capacity to regulate his own temperature. So we had to regulate his temperature by environment.
Wow.
And so if you're not checking his temperature constantly, you don't know what his body's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was literally hands-on 24/7 care that he required.
Mm-hmm.
And so trying to do that and care for him, stay cheerful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stay happy. And learn to live with my husband again. And my husband learned to live with us being home and those challenges. That was the most challenging time in mm-hmm. our life so far.
Mm-hmm.
But if somebody came back and told me, okay, we're going to relive this. My son passed away in 2017. If they said, we're going to start all over again and we're going to go back to October 2009, but right before Stephen's accident.
Mm-hmm.
And he has this accident. Now, how will you handle it?
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't handle it any differently. We were doctors, nurses, friends, even some family encouraged us to just put Stephen in a home
mm-hmm.
because he was never going to regain full consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just not an option for us mm-hmm. because he was our responsibility still. Yeah. I just don't think I will ever give up full responsibility of my kids or my grandkids. I just, I feel like that's why God puts us in a family, so mm-hmm. that we take care of one another.
Yeah.
And I would not do it any differently, even knowing the challenges we would be facing. You know, when we got thrown into it, we had no idea. We knew nobody who had gone through anything like this.
Mm-hmm.
So we had nothing to base our experience on.
Right.
It was learned by fire. And knowing what it was like now, I would do it again 100%, hopefully better than I did last time, but I would still make those same choices that mm-hmm. Stephen would be our responsibility to care for. Mm-hmm. And I just praise God that he was able to show us that he still was in control.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to say I wasn't angry at God at times, because mm-hmm. I was. Because I know God is powerful enough that he could have healed Stephen completely.
Yeah. Yeah.
He could have kept that accident from happening. But those truths are what allow me to have joy through it all. Because if God was not healing Stephen, and if God did not stop that accident from happening, there is a purpose for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I may never understand that, but I trust my God that I know there is a purpose for it.
Yeah.
And that's all that matters. And we just have to trust that he's going to use it for his glory.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what's allowed us to be able to maintain joy through it all. I miss Stephen daily. There's not a day goes by that I don't think about him. And I don't wish that he was still here. Even in the capacity of me having to care for him 24/7, I would rather have that than him be gone. But that's selfish on my part.
Yeah.
Because I know he's in a better place. I know God has made him whole again and he's not suffering any longer.
Yeah.
So him being here is for me.
Yeah.
Not for him.
Right.
But I miss him. Yeah. And I would do it the rest of my life if I was given that opportunity. But I'm glad that he is with God.
Yeah. We're going to move to our last little section of questions now. We're going to reflect on the art of home. That's the title of this podcast. And, you know, we want to keep reminding listeners, homemakers out there, that homemaking isn't something that just comes naturally. No. It's an art form. It's something you have to practice. And with that idea comes the idea that it's unique to you and your experience. So for you, how do you see homemaking as an art?
Well, I can give an example. Sure. Just this past Tuesday, when we had our small group coming, mm-hmm. I told everybody we were just going to do snacks this week and that I would have cheese and fruit and nuts available. I needed just a resting time from work. So I left work a little earlier on Tuesday than I normally do, mm-hmm. just to give me a little bit more time before I had a house full of people. Mm-hmm. And I came home and I laid out a spread for our small group. I didn't even realize. I got home and I thought, well, I have time and I'm going to take a little extra time in making this special tonight. Mm-hmm. And it was just something I needed to do for me. Mm-hmm. But I made little meat roses to put on the tray. Aww. And I had my cheese, cut up the cheese and had that all out, had fruit and did a fruit tray and mm-hmm. fruit dip and a nut display. And Mark walked in and he just looked at the spread and he's like, don't you think you kind of went a little over the top this time?
Is the queen coming?
Sarah came by with the kids because I had uh-huh. made cookies. So the kids wanted to come get cookies. And she was like, what are y'all doing tonight? Is it just your small group coming? I mean, even she was surprised. But it was important to me that this is a way to express mm-hmm. how much somebody else means to you,
yeah.
you know, to go a little special,
yeah.
not just open a bag of chips and set it out on the counter, mm-hmm. but to put a little effort into it. And that's what our community group has come to mean to us. They yeah. are becoming family. As a matter of fact, Tuesday night, when we all got done visiting around the table, one of the ladies got up to start cleaning and I told her, you always work when you come to my house, just rest. And everyone was just up. The whole community group moved to the kitchen mm-hmm. and people were putting stuff and back in jars and putting mm-hmm. wrapping stuff in plastic and putting it in the refrigerator. One of the men came to the kitchen and he's in there washing any of the dishes.
Yeah.
And I mean, I told him, I just stopped. I said, this is the most this group has ever felt like family to me.
Yeah.
And we've been growing as a family, getting to know one another, growing in relationship. But that togetherness of mm-hmm. working together,
yeah.
that is what the art of home is to me, mm-hmm. is that you do this together and you do it out of love. Mm-hmm. It's not a chore.
Yeah.
It's not hard work. It takes time. But it's worth it because mm-hmm. you're sharing your heart with somebody else.
Yeah.
And in return, they're sharing their heart back with you. And that to me is just priceless.
Mm-hmm.
Does that answer your
yes,
question?
That's a okay. wonderful answer. And I think that's a good place to stop.
Okay.
So thank you so much.
You're welcome.
For sharing all about your story and It's been really great to hear it and a real privilege.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for spending time with us today listening to Kelly's story. We hope that you're leaving here inspired and encouraged to practice the art of home with faithfulness. And we're praying for you, listener, that no matter what circumstances you find yourself in, you would lean on the Lord who is able to strengthen and sustain you and even give you joy and hope in the midst of trials. If you've been moved by Kelly's story, if you have a story like hers to share, or if you just want to comment, why don't you drop us a line? We would love to hear from you. Send us a note to contact@theartofhomepodcast.com. As always, the resources mentioned in today's episode are available in the show notes and on our website, theartofhomepodcast.com. Also over on the website, you can take a peek into Kelly's house. We've got some snapshots of the inside of her home. So just go over to the website, click on the blog post for this episode, Faithful Homemaking with Kelly Akins, Season 2, Episode 1. Make sure you're following us over on Instagram at The Art of Home Podcast. And finally, spread the word. Share this episode with someone you know, a homemaker who would be encouraged by this story or maybe another episode that you've heard in the past. Subscribe to our podcast so that you don't miss anything. And be sure to leave us a review wherever you're listening to podcasts. Until next time, keep practicing your art of making a home.